This is Audible.
Podium Audio presents Reckless, Book 3 of Raleigh Rebels, written by Callie Hart, performed by Teddy Hamilton and Charlotte North. Prologue.
It's like Star Wars, Mom. All the little white flecks flying toward the window are like stars. This is what it looks like when you're traveling through space, you know?
The woman sitting in the driver's seat of the people carrier smiles affectionately at the young boy sitting in the back seat. Her back hurts from all the driving, but they're on the home stretch now. Well, not the home stretch. Home's an hour in the other direction, where the roads are a decent size, people are civilized, and you can buy a cup of coffee that doesn't taste like piss. Raleigh is the worst kind of backward, podunk, nowhere town there is. And if the woman had her way, she'd never visit the damn place again. Soon, perhaps. The wheels are in motion. One day not too far from now, she'll gain custody of the little boy in the back seat, and it'll become official. She'll be his mother. Legally. She won't have to flinch every time someone overhears him calling her that. It was wrong to ask him to use that title before everything's been ironed out in court. If things don't go according to plan, and the boy's brother does somehow manage to gain custody of the kid, then it'll end up being very disruptive for the boy. He needed a mother, though. He's never had anyone solid and stable in his life to call Mom. She wants to be that maternal figure to him. Hell, the first time he called her by that title, she locked herself in the downstairs bathroom by the utility room, the washing machine midway through its loud spin cycle, and she squealed like a giddy teenager into the new Ray Dunn hand towels she just bought from Target. She could have corrected him. If she'd had more self-control, she could have told him it wasn't a good idea to use names like Mom just yet. But it had felt far too good for that. The precious little boy, small for his 11 years, with his mop of black, wavy hair and his dark, expressive eyes, wanted her to be his mother, and there was no way she was going to turn down the role. She'd immediately started planning the trip to Hawaii for the holidays, knowing that the time away together would drive a wedge between the boy and his brother. An escape from all the cold, the rain, and the snow. And surfing? Sunshine? Christmas Day dinner on the beach with a colorful lei around his neck and the sound of the ocean waves crashing on the shore to rock him to sleep each night? It was a trip that would stay with him forever, something only she could give him. Something that useless piece of shit brother of his would never be able to give him. Everything had been going so well. The woman knew it in her bones. Each evening when she kissed the boy goodnight, pressing her lips to the crown of his head, smelling the salt in his thick confusion of hair, she felt it working. He was forgetting about his brother, talking about him less, thinking about him less, growing closer and closer to her instead. And then it had all come crashing down. Surprise, surprise, the brother had found a way to interfere with her plans. He always did. The phone call came in just after dinner when she and the boy had been cleaning up in the kitchen of the Airbnb she'd rented. She'd let the old school answering machine catch the call, which had been her biggest mistake. If the boy hadn't heard the social worker's voice projecting from those shitty speakers, she could have hidden the news from him until they returned to Washington. Hello, Jackie. It's Maeve Rogers from CPS. Sorry to be calling so late, and I'm sorry to leave this kind of information in a message for you, but it's kind of urgent. Alex has been arrested for shooting a boy from his school. I know that sounds bad, but believe me, it's not what you're thinking. He's being held at Stafford Creek. He could really use a friendly face right now. Is there any way you can bring Ben back to Raleigh to see him? I'm confident this is all going to blow over quickly, but still, Stafford Creek's no walk in the park. Even a short stay in a place like that can change a person, and Alex has been doing so well. He needs Ben right now. If he knows his brother's close by, I know he'll do his best to stay out of trouble. You know I wouldn't suggest it unless... The message had ended there, the machine cutting the social worker off, but it was already too late. The damage had been done. Ben had heard those magical words, his brother needed him, and that was it. Final. There was no way she could have kept him in Hawaii without alienating him. She'd tried, even knowing that would probably be the outcome. For another week, she delayed traveling back to the mainland, put it off. told the boy that his brother would call himself if he wanted Ben to come back. In the end, there was nothing else she could do, though. Reluctantly, she'd purchased the tickets back to Seattle, viciously stabbing at the keyboard keys as she'd entered the digits of her credit card into the booking form. And now, here they were, 11 o'clock at night, driving through a godforsaken blizzard on their way to Raleigh, when they should be tucked up, sound asleep in their own small little Hawaiian paradise. The woman sets her jaw, staring straight ahead, trying to breathe around her anger. "Prisons are pretty scary places, you know, Benny. Even for adults. You sure you want to go there tomorrow?" The woman knows it's a low blow, but she has to try. The boy blinks owlishly at her from the dark recesses of the back seat.
"I'm not afraid," he says. "I'm excited. I've only seen prison on TV, and I get to see Alex, too. He's been waiting for me."
"He doesn't know you're coming, remember? We kept it a secret, so it would be a surprise." The woman convinced the boy that it'd be fun, a sort of game to show up at the prison unexpectedly. The dirty truth is that she's still hoping to persuade him that the visit is a bad idea. The boy nods thoughtfully in the rear view.
"I know, but he'll be excited when I get there. I bet he's missed me. Now we can all spend Christmas together, can't we? We'll be able to take him home with us from the prison, and everything will be okay."
"It doesn't work like that, buddy. Your brother did something really, really bad. That's why they're keeping him at the prison. He'll have to stay there until they can decide what they want to do with him. We've talked about this, remember? There's a chance Alex will have to stay in prison for a very long time. Maybe even years." Wouldn't that just be fan-fucking-tastic? Where has that sour taste in her mouth suddenly come from, though? Tastes like lies and deceit. The woman swallows it down, doing her best to ignore the rotten tang. She didn't lie to the child. His brother shot someone, for crying out loud. Shot somebody. A good boy from a wealthy, well-to-do family. She's done her research. She's read the news reports online. There are plenty of rumors and mistruths flying around, but the woman's been dealing with the boy's brother for years now. She knows him inside out. He's a liar and a thief. He breaks everything he touches. There's no way he shot an Ivy League candidate because he was trying to murder that ditzy little girlfriend of his. She probably came to her senses and cheated on the brother with the weaving boy. That was more likely. The brother had probably found them in bed together, fucking like the horny teenaged morons that they were, and he'd lost his temper, pulled the gun and shot Weaving in a fit of rage.
"I just want to see him," the boy says quietly. "I know he didn't mean to hurt that other boy. Alex isn't bad, Mom."
Urg, poor, naive, innocent, sweet child. Maybe the realities of a prison will scare some sense into him. She'll go with him in the morning, and she'll do nothing to shield him from the horrors of an underfunded penitentiary. There's every chance. Shit! Red. White. Startled wild brown eyes. The impact rocks the car, the sound a deafening roar. The windshield. Gone. Glass, shattered, raining down like diamonds. The woman wrenches at the wheel, stunned, reacting blindly, steering the car left, left, left. Weightlessness. Darkness. The desperate, frightened, thin scream of a child.
Alex!
So much fear, so much terror, white spiraling into the black. Another impact, jarring. Breathless, winded, jagged, sharp pain, 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 pain. Ticking metal, hissing steam. They're off the road, in a ditch. Accident. There's been an accident. A deer, out of nowhere. It came out of nowhere.
Ben? Benny, are you okay?
Nothing. The woman tries to turn and sees the shard of metal protruding from her chest. It doesn't make sense. That piece of metal. It's a part of the car's fender. How? It shouldn't be inside the car. It shouldn't be inside her.
Ben? Ben, answer me, baby. Can you hear me? Are you okay?
It's impossible to spin in the seat. The twisted piece of fender won't allow for that kind of movement. Instead, the woman has to use the rear view, angling it to the left and down, in order to find the boy on the back seat. His head is open, blood pouring down his face. It looks bad enough that when she opens her mouth and tries to cry out, no sound comes. His eyes are open. He silently blinks at her, his small shoulders shaking. Oh God, the boy's shoulders dislocated, and she can see white showing in amongst the beautiful thick waves of his hair, the kind of white that should never be showing. A small, voiceless whimper comes out of his mouth. Oh God, oh God, Benny, hold on, son, I'll get help. Each word is harder to form, each breath is harder to take. Her insides feel wet. It feels like she's breathing water. With both hands, the woman takes hold of the sharp metal pinning her to her seat, and she slowly begins to pull. There isn't much time. If she tries, if she really tries, if she hurries. The pain nearly robs her of her last moments of consciousness. If she was alone, the pain would be enough to force her into submission right here and now. She would gladly throw in the towel, admit defeat, and sigh out her last breath, knowing that it'd be a reprieve from the staggering wall of agony that's slamming into her. She isn't alone, though. There's Ben. He's hurt, and he needs her. If she doesn't make it back onto the road, then he isn't going to make it. The broken piece of fender, slick with blood, makes a hollow, clanging sound as it falls into the footwell. Warmth spreads down the woman's chest, staining the Aloha Kakou sweater she bought at the airport a dazzling shade of red. The door won't open on her first try. It won't budge on her second attempt. The third time, the woman lays her shoulder into the busted plastic housing of the door, and the metal groans, swinging open, depositing her out onto the ground in the snow. Get up. Save him. Save your son. Your son. Your son. Your son. With her life pouring out of her into the cold, relentless night, the woman manages to crawl halfway up the slope that leads up to the road. Dizzy, disoriented, fighting for breath, her brain feels so damn muddled all of a sudden. Why was she climbing up the slope again? She rolls onto her back, dazed and numb, and laughs silently as she coughs up blood. Wow, the night is so beautiful. The snowflakes, swirling down from the heavens, so thick and fast. They really look like stars.
1. Silver. Guilt's an unpredictable beast. It doesn't behave the way you assume it will. When Casey Winters was still undisputed queen of Raleigh High, and I was yet to be cast out of the Sirens, she encouraged us to be as hateful as she was. The meaner we were, the more arrogant, the more we established our dominance over the lower echelons of the socioeconomic student body, the more we pleased Casey. The pursuit to win her approval was a full-time job that required a level of dedication and determination most high school students are unfamiliar with. But I was never as cruel or unkind as Zen was. Fiercely competitive, Zen was always willing to take things that one step too far. By rights, she should have been Casey's favorite. It never worked out that way, though. I laughed along with the jokes. I made spiteful comments under my breath whenever Casey prodded at me to tease someone, and I made sure to mock the girls on the cheer team whenever one of them fucked up. In hindsight, I was the John Lennon to Zen's Colonel Gaddafi, but that was irrelevant. I was Casey's favorite. I never felt guilty about the malicious acts I participated in under Casey's reign of terror. Not until long after, once Jake and his bastard friends held me down and hurt me. This morning, however, I'm choked with guilt. I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't constructed a fake body in my bed out of lumpy pillows and a wig and snuck out of the house in the middle of the night. Mom and Max are in Toronto for the next 6 weeks, visiting my Aunt Sarah. Dad gave his permission for me to stay at Alex's apartment. I don't have to be home until midday, but it's Christmas morning. It feels like I'm breaking some kind of rule, waking up here in bed with Alex, blissed out and deliriously happy. We spent last night with Dad, decorating the entire house, arranging our gifts by the fireplace, wrestling ornaments out of Nipper's mouth, and drinking eggnog. But I still feel bad that my father's going to wake up this morning to an empty house for the first time in 20-something years. It just doesn't seem right.
The sun ekes in through the window next to the bed, washing my skin in cool winter light. It's still early, just after dawn. If we get up and get dressed now, there's still time to make it back to the house before Dad's finished with his morning shower. God knows what Alex is going to say about leaving his warm, comfortable bed, though. His arm tightens reflexively around me, his body hot as a furnace, his smooth, hard chest rising and falling beneath my head as I lay nestled into his side. For the past 15 minutes, I've been lightly tracing the tips of my fingers over the lines of the extensive ink that covers his torso and spreads down his arms, admiring the complexity and the beauty of the work. And he hasn't even stirred. Once he passes out, there's very little that can wake a sleeping Alessandro Moretti. I take the opportunity to study him. Usually, I'm careful about the length of time I allow myself to stare at his handsome, artfully drawn features. When he's awake, he's highly sensitive to the weight of another person's eyes on him. He knows the moment he's being watched, and he isn't afraid to call me out on it when he catches me scrutinizing him. Plenty of times I've done it unwittingly, risked a sidelong glance at him just to see what expression he's making or to gauge the look in his eyes, only to wind up mortified when he curves one of his dark eyebrows and angles his face toward me, smirking like the bastard that he is.
Thirsty, Argento? Need something to quench your appetite?
I shiver against the mere memory of such a suggestion. I always need him. I always want him, his hands on my waist, roughly kneading my breasts, his sharp-edged, filthy tongue between my legs. Moments like this, when Alex is asleep and dead to the world, are the only times I get to feast on the sight of him without having to fend off hot embarrassment. So I seize them with both hands. His eyelashes are so long, ink black and perfectly curled. They look like they've been drawn on individually by hand. The deep dimple in his cheek is missing. His mouth, the tool he uses most to convey his amusement, courtesy of that damned smirk of his, is relaxed, his full lips slightly open. The Cupid's bow cut from his top lip is so pronounced that scores of women have likely envied it since he was old enough for them to notice him. And boy, oh boy, do they notice him. He doesn't play on it or really acknowledge it, but the truth of the matter is that Alex turns women's heads wherever he goes. In the grocery store, at the gas station, in line for popcorn at the movie theater. Even at school, I sometimes catch the eyes of the female faculty members inadvertently following after him as he walks down the hall or across the cafeteria. Basically, he's sexy as fuck. Good-looking, in a rough-cut, edgy, overtly dangerous way that turns people on and scares them at the same time. And somehow, I am the one he's decided to claim as his own. The math doesn't quite add up. His pulse throbs evenly in the hollow of his throat, making his tattooed, vine-covered skin tick there. His nose, arrow straight and in perfect proportion to the rest of his face, wrinkles slightly as he swallows, turning his face toward me in his sleep. It's as if he can tell I'm assessing the individual parts of him that make him whole, and he's trying to give me a better view. God, how have I ended up so entangled in this person? I try to play it cool as often as possible, but I'm sure he sees right through me. I'm addicted to him. Obsessed. I never wanted to be that girl, the girl who loses herself in her high school crush, but I find myself unraveling day by day. If someone asked me to find the thread where I end and Alex begins, then I honestly wouldn't be able to pinpoint it. It's too interwoven with him now. I'm lost to his dark eyes and the gravel of his voice and the calluses on his hands that match my own. I go very, very still when his breathing hitches. It's weird that you can tell when a person wakes and their consciousness comes flooding back in, even if their outward appearance doesn't change. Alex looks like he's still asleep, his eyelids closed, facial features relaxed and loose. But he's awake. I can feel him there. Like the answer to a question that I've been asking for a really long time, reaching out for me. Bracing, I wait for the caustic comment that's about to come out of his mouth. He'll tease me any chance he gets, especially if he's caught me swooning over him. Seconds pass, and then a minute. but Alex remains silent. I begin to think that maybe I'm mistaken and he isn't awake after all. But then his eyelids flutter and he slowly, languidly opens them. The dark pools of his eyes meet mine, and my breath catches in my throat. He doesn't smile, doesn't say a word. He stares back at me with the intensity of 1,000 burning suns, his gaze searching and curious, his expression fierce. And for the millionth time since I met him, I have to steel myself, forcing myself not to look away. He's so damn serious. I'm eaten alive by his thorough examination, stripped bare and left stupefied. The crisp cotton sheets whisper as Alex turns onto his side to face me properly, sliding himself across the pillow so that his forehead is little more than an inch away from mine. Still, he doesn't say anything. We face one another, chests rising and falling, hearts beating in time, locked in this weird staring contest that's both intimidating and incredibly satiating. I'm dying of thirst, and Alex is an ice-cold glass of water. I'm burning alive, and he is the flood that douses the flames. I'm falling so fast, so hard, so dangerously out of all control, and Alex is the one who reaches out and catches me. This man, who has been nothing to so many, is absolutely everything to me. Suddenly, I can't bear the silence anymore. Dad can make it through breakfast without us. I have to have Alex. I have to absorb him into me somehow. In the very least, I have to press myself against him and feel his heart quicken. We move at the same time, sharing the same thought, needing the same thing. His mouth meets mine, and it's as though my soul's just been cut loose and is flying free. His lips press against mine, not rough, but firm and insistent, and he blows out a long, hot breath down his nose, sighing softly. Our bodies gravitate toward each other, closing the small space between us, and Alex slides his free arm around me, pulling me up against him. He isn't like other guys our age. They're all still transitioning into manhood. Their bodies might have filled out and made it through the other side of puberty, but they're still swamped in confusion and uncertainty as people, trying to figure out what part they are going to play in the theaters of their own lives. Alex isn't confused. He knows himself. He's confident in his beautifully decorated skin. When he holds me the way he's holding me now, kisses me the way he's kissing me now, he's so sure of himself that he leaves no room for doubt. I belong to him. He's staked his claim, and he isn't planning on relinquishing. Ever. He forces my mouth open, slipping his tongue past my lips, not caring that neither of us have brushed our teeth yet, and the bed feels like it's tilting, tipping sideways, my head spiraling out of control. Only he can unbalance me like this when I'm fucking horizontal. Winding his fingers into my hair, he cradles my face in his hands, pressing his hips against mine, and any kind of chill I might have been cultivating up until this point flies out of the window. His morning glory really is fucking glorious. I can't wait for him to thrust it deep inside me. If that's not where this is going, then there's gonna be fireworks. Pulling the duvet down, I slide my hand up Alex's side, relishing the delicious shift of the muscle beneath his skin as I stroke up his back between the flat blades of his shoulders. From there, I don't have far to reach for the back of his neck. I dig my fingernails into his skin, savoring the prickle of the freshly shaved, close-cropped hair at the back of his head, and Alex groans breathlessly into my mouth.
Fuck, Argento. You're sure you want to be pulling that shit this early in the morning? You're gonna get yourself into trouble.
I love the sound of that. I've learned from past experience that trouble with Alex always ends in an orgasm or three. The kind of brain-melting orgasm that leaves you boneless and sated. I laugh, pulling my bottom lip through my teeth. What if I like trouble? Alex grins, arching his back like a cat as I scratch the back of his head again. He reacts the same way without fail whenever I do this. He can't help himself. His eyes, dark as midnight pools, roll back in his head as he angles his chin up, exposing the column of his throat, and I have to refrain from sinking my teeth into the curve where his shoulder meets his neck. Like me, my Alessandro isn't averse to a little pain every now and then. He'd enjoy the press of my incisors against his jugular, I'm sure. But we're going to be seeing Dad soon, and my old man has G.I. Joe-grade eagle eyes. He'd spot a hickey a mile away. Alex's hand snaps up out of nowhere, grabbing hold of me by the wrist and wrenching my hand up high over my head. His eyes open lazily, traveling up and down my face, his gaze finally settling on my mouth.
You woke up feisty, Dolcezza. Careful, I could get used to this.
In a split second, he shoves me onto my back, pulling me away from the cold wall so that my body is in the center of the bed, and he holds himself directly above me. The arm I was lying on gets repositioned, my other hand joining my one already above my head, and Alex bears down, burying his face into my neck. Apparently, he has no aversion to using his teeth on areas of my body that my father will likely see. Alex, Alex, I pant, wheezing the words out, squirming underneath the satisfyingly heavy press of his body. But I'm only making things worse. The more I writhe, the more fired up he's going to get. No way will he leave me unmarked with me responding like this. Once upon a time, that thought would have scared the ever-loving shit out of me. Pinned to a mattress, hands locked over my head, restrained with nowhere to go and no way of getting out. My body would have forced me to bolt and run, as memories of Jacob Weaving's leering face assaulted me from all angles. But Alex isn't Jake. He's nothing like any of the sick, twisted, evil fucks who trapped me in that bathroom. One word from me, stop, and he'll stop. He'll be on the other side of the room before I can even register that he's let me go. I participate in this kind of roughhousing with Alex because I know without question that he'd never do anything to hurt me.
I want to fucking eat you, he huffs into my hair. I want to devour every last piece of you. You taste like fucking sugar. I can't get enough.
Gasping for air, I bow away from the bed, crushing my tits against his chest, willing for him to take more of me. The thin material of the shirt he let me sleep in last night rubs against my nipples, causing them to stiffen painfully, and my imagination runs away with me. I'm picturing him licking and sucking at the tight pink buds of flesh. I can already see the white flash of his teeth as he takes them into his mouth one at a time and bites down until I cry out his name. Alex pulls back, chuckling darkly as he hovers over me.
You want to get fucked, don't you, Silver Parisi?
Not really a question. He knows it's the truth just as much as I do. His gray sweats are riding low, exposing his hip bones and the beginnings of the maddening V that dips down lower between his legs. The sight of the tensed muscles in his chest and stomach is the final straw. A girl can only take so much provocation before she outright loses her mind. I place my feet flat against the mattress, bending my knees, and grip him between my thighs, squeezing tight, silently begging him to tear my shorts off and plunge himself inside of me already. A jolt of pain lances through my side, my still broken ribs complaining bitterly about all of the movement. But the discomfort doesn't compare to the promise of the pleasure that's just around the corner. The bruises still blooming all over my body like morbid flowers are a grim, ugly reminder of recent trauma. But it's as though Alex doesn't even see them. He stares down at me, wide-eyed and wondrous, like I'm the most beautiful thing he's ever seen. Sitting back on his heels, he straddles me, hooking his fingers beneath the waistband of my shorts, almost giving me what I so badly need. His erection tents the material of his sweats, perfectly outlining the head of his dick, and I reach down, about to close my hand around him, and
dum, dum, dum.
Three loud bangs echo through the apartment, bouncing off the walls. Alex's head whips around, looking back over his shoulder, frowning deeply at the interruption.
7 a.m. Christmas morning? You sure your dad was cool with you crashing here?
I nod, need still pulsing around my nervous system, waiting for his hands to return to the waistband of my shorts. You were there when I asked him. Alex grunts.
Then whoever that is can fuck right off.
Normally, I'd be the voice of reason. It's early, so maybe it's important. Could be Henry from downstairs, needing access to a breaker board or something. Perhaps my mom found out where I was and lost her fucking mind. Today, I'm throwing caution to the wind, though. I don't care who's at the door or what they want. Alex was about to strip me naked and fuck me, and that's honestly all I care about. He grabs my shorts, yanking them down over my hips, and I whimper in anticipation. Jesus, when did I become this needy? It's all because of him. I'd still be at the hand-holding stage with anyone else, but it's impossible to cultivate that kind of control with Alex. My body craves him like a junkie craves their next fix. I've forgotten what restraint even looks like these days.
You wet for me, dolcezza? You think you deserve my tongue on your clit?
Heat explodes across my face and down my torso, shooting in between my thighs. Holy fuck. A handful of words and a piercing stare, and I'm ready to implode.
Dum, dum, dum.
Alex, open the door. It's Maeve. Maeve? What the hell? The name sets alarm bells ringing in my head. Fuck, it sets alarm klaxons ringing in my head. Social workers don't clock in on the biggest holiday of the year. I'm assuming they don't, anyway. Dad's always complaining about civil servants and how they're hardly ever available during normal working hours. Today's Christmas Day. Maeve should be spending time with her family. I don't like the panicked note I heard in her voice through three walls and across an entire apartment. Makes me think worrying thoughts. A cold, unpleasant sensation creeps its way up my spine. Don't answer. I grip Alex tighter between my legs, holding him in place. She can't just show up here whenever she feels like it. You're allowed some privacy, right? Don't I deserve some undisturbed time alone with you? I sound like a petty little bitch, whining at her boyfriend to pay attention to her, but that isn't what's going on here. Maeve's advocated for Alex on numerous occasions. She was standing up for him the very first time I saw him in the hallway outside Darhauer's office. She squared away the fact that he was a minor living on his own, even though he was still supposed to be under Monty's care. Without her, Alex would never have scored this apartment. And she promised she'd help Alex with his custody case for Ben. Not to mention, if she hadn't been standing by his side when he went into court after shooting Jake, then chances are he'd probably still be in jail right now. Alex verbally swipes at her all the time, but I know he appreciates her. I do too. I think the woman's a badass. No, I don't want him to go and answer the door because something bad is waiting for us on the other side of it. And once we've let it in, we won't be able to shut it out again. I rarely have gut feelings about anything, but this is different. A sense of dread crushes me in its jaws. This is the kind of foreboding that perches on your shoulder moments before something comes along and destroys everything you hold dear, and you right along with it.
Needy little Parisi. Don't worry, I've been a good boy. I haven't broken any laws. That I know of, anyway.
He smirks, amusement sparking like the embers of a fire in his dark eyes.
The weirdest things turn out to be illegal sometimes. I'll see what she wants and get rid of her. The woman's persistent as fuck. If she thinks I'm home, she won't leave.
Alex, I'm not messing around. You need to answer this door right now. Dark hair tumbling into his eyes, Alex cants his head to one side, his expression rueful.
See?
He climbs off me, and that icy dread sinks its claws deeper. I want to grab hold of him and make him stay. Locked away here in our little bubble, whatever madness exists outside can't affect us, can't hurt us. Glancing down, Alex notices the fact that his hard-on is still tenting his sweatpants. He laughs breathlessly as he reaches down the front of his pants and tucks his dick into his waistband in an attempt to hide it.
Don't look so sad, dolcezza. No chance this thing's going anywhere anytime soon. I'm harder than fucking reinforced steel. Give me 2 seconds. Here.
He takes hold of me by the wrist, guiding my hand down in between my own legs.
I want you shaking and trembling by the time I get back. No coming, though. I'll punish the shit out of you if you rob me of that.
I watch him put on a t-shirt, frozen in place and in time. Later, this moment will replay itself on a loop in my head. I'll recall the way the muscles in Alex's broad back shifted so beautifully as he worked his arms into his shirt and pulled it lazily over his head. I won't be able to forget the slow, confident smile he throws over his shoulder at me as he steps over his guitar case and leaves the bedroom, drawing the door half closed behind him. I'll still be smelling the rich, doughy, enticing aroma of fresh bread emanating from the bakery across the road, and it will still be turning my stomach. Mechanically, I inch myself toward the edge of the bed. My arms and legs are wooden and uncooperative as I tug on a sweater and a pair of jeans. Basic manners dictate that it'd be rude to follow after him. I should give him space to have a private conversation with his social worker, but manners and etiquette don't seem important right now. I need to be with Alex. I can feel it. I know it. The air in the hallway is a solid 10 degrees colder than in the bedroom. A gust of biting wind snakes its way past the two figures standing in the doorway up ahead. It knifes straight through the black hoodie I just pulled on, making my skin break out in goosebumps. A high-pitched ringing sound mutes my hearing as I take each step forward. You're wrong. You're being fucking paranoid. Stop overreacting. Offer to make a pot of coffee or something. Seriously, chill the fuck out, girl. My little pep talk falls on deaf ears. 3 feet away, Alex reaches out and takes a hold of the door, his knuckles turning white as he grasps at the wood.
What?
I know, Alex. Look, let me in, okay? There's a lot of information to unpack here. You should be sitting.
You're lying.
Alex's shoulder blades knit together beneath his t-shirt. The tension he's radiating is even more shocking than the cold.
This is her. I know it is. Jackie's concocted this bullshit story to cut ties with me for good. She wants to make sure I never see him again. And you're going along with it for some reason. Why? Why the fuck would you do that?
His voice is soft, but he's tripping all over his words. Right behind him now, I peer around his arm, making eye contact with Maeve. I've only seen her the once, that time at Raleigh. She was wearing an elegant gray pantsuit, the collar of her shirt pressed into a sharp fold. Her dark hair was swept back into a practical bun. This woman looks nothing like the person who argued Alex's case with Darhauer. She's dressed in track pants and a massive sweater with the words, "spiritual gangster," emblazoned across the front. The messy topknot on the crown of her head looks like rats have been nesting in it, and the telltale black smudge of yesterday's mascara beneath each of her eyes implies that she didn't wash her face this morning before she rushed out of the house. She shakes her head, her voice, rough with emotion, catching in her throat.
You think I'm that cruel? You don't think I'm on your side? After everything that's happened?
Alex notices that I'm behind him. He moves an inch to the side, making room for me, but his eyes don't break away from Maeve.
If you're not complicit, then she's fooling you too, he says gruffly. You know how bad she wants to keep him. She'll do anything to make sure I don't get Ben back.
Maeve drops her head, her eyes closing for a beat. When she opens them, she doesn't look up. She stares down at the keys in her hands, rubbing the pad of her thumb against a gold disc that's attached to the fob.
I wish that were true. If that were the case, it'd be simple. We'd track them down and find them. But I was just at the funeral home, Alex. I saw Ben. It was him. He's been there almost a week now. There was some kind of admin mix-up. They couldn't figure out who they needed to call.
Alex backs away, shaking his head. He stumbles, barely bothering to correct his footing as he attempts a hasty retreat.
Bullshit, he hisses. Fucking bullshit. Jackie. She found a way to. I'm telling you, this is just Jackie.
This isn't pretend, Alex. I'm not making it up.
Maeve sounds like she's on the other side of the world, speaking down a really bad telephone line. My ears are trying to block out what she's saying.
She was at the funeral home too, okay? Her injuries were catastrophic. She didn't make it either.
Alex stops, slumping sideways against the wall. He looks at me, a tiny frown marring his brow, his chest not moving, and my heart fucking shatters and breaks. I haven't heard Maeve say it. I haven't heard him say it either, but the words are there, like an IED I've unwittingly stepped on, blowing up and blowing up and blowing up, the explosion never fucking ending.
Ben's dead.
Something awful has happened. Alex's brother is gone. Day one.
I don't know what to do, Dad. He just keeps staring at the wall. I can't do anything for him. I can't help him. Please tell me what I'm supposed to do.
Day two.
Please, baby. You've got to eat something. Can you just try? You're going to make yourself ill. Alex? Alex!
Day three.
They asked what you want him to wear. I can go to the store and get a suit or something. What do you think? I'm sorry. I know you don't want to deal with this, but they say they need to know.
Day four. I don't want a fucking piece of toast, okay? Just put the bread down, Silver. Fuck. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. God, I'm so fucking sorry. I shouldn't have snapped at you. Jesus fucking Christ, you shouldn't be around me right now. You really need to go. Day five. When will we have given enough? When will we have lost enough? There's no one out there keeping track of how much pain we're dealt, how much we're asked to bear. And that's the most terrifying thing, Silver. Because if there's no one keeping track, then there's no one out there to make it stop. Day six. I love you so goddamn much, Argento. I know you're trying to help, but please, please go home for a while. I'll be okay, I promise. I just need a little time to think. Two. Alex. 1 week later. I jerk upright, the sound of loud, obnoxious punk music splitting my head apart. For a bewildering moment, I'm so fucking turned around that I have no idea where I am or what the fuck is happening. The trailer's popcorn ceiling isn't where it's supposed to be. The window to my right wasn't there last night when I collapsed on top of my bedsheets and descended into oblivion. The door opposite the bed has moved 3 feet to the left of its own accord. Only, wait, the trailer. I don't live in the trailer anymore. I have an apartment now. I live above the hardware store, and Silver. The moment I think of her, only dangerous memories begin to creep back in. Truths that shouldn't be faced right now. I sit bolt upright, the room seesawing like a pitching ship as I try to get up from the bed, and realize, belatedly, that I'm more hungover than I have ever been in my entire fucking life, and I'm about to throw my guts up. Holy shit. Scrambling, I'm all arms and legs as I try to make it to the bathroom. Luck ain't on my side, though. I retch, bile blazing a pathway up my esophagus, and I am out of fucking options. I grab the first thing I lay my hands on and double over it, capturing the vomit that erupts out of my mouth. It feels as though I've been repeatedly donkey-kicked in the stomach by the time the spasms in my diaphragm quit and I can finally draw in a ragged, burning breath. Which is when I see that I've just hurled in my empty fucking guitar case. Fuck. 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 Fucking fuck. I grip my teeth, wincing as the raucous, pounding music playing somewhere in the apartment intensifies to a deafening crescendo. There can be only one explanation for any of this madness. Somehow I pull in a second shallow breath and roar at the top of my lungs, Xander! A jarring screech interrupts the thrashing punk tune. The sound of a needle being egregiously dragged across the surface of a record, and the music cuts off. Steady, thumping sounds follow. I can't tell if it's footfall or the reluctant, labored pumping of my own heart, but a second later, Xander Hawkins appears in the bedroom doorway, clad in a pair of black boxers, a bright red silk robe, the kind of robe bored housewives wear in soap operas while lazily considering whether or not they should try and seduce the pool boy. Xander's broad, shit-eating grin dissolves into open disgust when he lays eyes on me. Dude, you desecrated your gig bag. Fuck's wrong with you? You're sitting next to a perfectly good trash can. I look to my left, in the direction that he's pointing, and he's right. I could easily have grabbed the trash can instead of my case a second ago. But I was too preoccupied with the fact that I'd felt like I was about to die on my bedroom floor. Still feels like I might expire any second now. What the fuck did you do to me? I press a hand to my face. Fuck. Breathing is so much easier with my eyes closed. Alex, where were you? I don't like it here. Can you come and get me? God, nope. No fucking way. A spiderweb of pain spreads its fingers across my chest. Quickly, I chase the sound of that voice right out of my head. Xander lets out a scathing, "Ha!" I sense his approach, but I don't bother cracking my eyelids. "You did this all by yourself, my friend. I told you to stop after your 10th shot, but would you listen? I'm gonna let you guess the answer to that one. Boy, oh boy, you look like expertly hammered shit, my friend." I swallow, tamping down the urge to vomit again. "Tequila? I already know. Can taste the answer. You took down that sexy Latina mistress like she'd just begged you to fuck up her shit," Xander confirms. "I barely got a look in. Lucky for me, I brought my friend Jack Daniels along to your sad sack one-man pity party. Otherwise, I'd have had to watch you drink yourself into oblivion totally fucking sober. That would have been really lame, dude. It was bad enough watching it all go down while buzzed." I groan, which I instantly regret. The vibration of the air traveling over my vocal cords makes me feel like I'm about to implode or explode. Not sure which. "Pity party?" I pant. Xander's pronounced shrug is practically audible. "Don't ask me. I haven't got a clue why Alessandro Moretti, Destroyer of Worlds, came out to play. Not my job to pry. I'm only good for vague surface emotions and drinking games. You did mention something about your little brother. And that woman who's taking care of him, you called her, what was it? An evil, vicious cunt?" "Yeah, evil, vicious cunt sounds about right." I clench my jaw, grabbing hold of my own wrist and squeezing it as hard as I can. I have to get the fuck out of here. My stomach complains resentfully as I heave myself into a seated position, leaning my back against the side of my bed. "Phone? Have you seen my phone?" Xander chuckles under his breath as he slumps down beside me on the floor. "Oh yeah, I've seen it all right. Here." The light stabs at my eyes when I crack them open. Xander reaches into the pocket of his red silk robe and takes out a mangled piece of bent metal, placing it unceremoniously on top of my chest. I haven't had the iPhone for long, a couple of months maybe. I'd held out on buying a cell phone for the longest time, convinced I was never going to need one, and the mere purchase of such a piece of technology was going to make my life infinitely worse. Then I'd met Silver, and all that had changed. The phone quickly became one of my most treasured possessions because it was my direct link to her. Now its screen is shattered, the whole thing is warped, bent into a worrying curve. No way it still works. "You were laying into it with a hammer when I got here," Xander supplies, sticking the end of a vape pen into his mouth. He pulls on it, his cheeks hollowing out for a second, and then a thick cloud of white smoke pours down his nose and out of his mouth. The smell of cherries fills the bedroom, sweet and noxious. "I've seen some stupid shit in my time, but that particular act of wanton destruction topped the list. These things are fucking expensive. How the fuck are you gonna watch porn now?" "I need to call Silver," I groan. Unless you have her number memorized, I'm afraid you're shit out of luck, Xander says in a sing-song voice. His cheery disposition is hurting my goddamn teeth. I could drive you over to her place since you're clearly in no fit state to operate heavy machinery, he offers. But I only just got the Thunderbird and you still look barfy. I'm not having you tossing your cookies all over the leather. It's original. I can't voice my displeasure at his comment in real words, but the guttural wolf-like growl I force out does the trick. Xander sucks on his vape pen again, blowing out of the corner of his mouth, purposefully aiming the sickly sweet billow of white smoke at my face. Do that again and I'll shove that thing where the sun don't shine. All right, touchy, touchy. Aren't you supposed to be at Raleigh anyway? Xander assesses me coolly. Not unless the powers that be are now expecting us to attend that shithole during the Christmas break. So you thought you'd blast the most offensive music I own as loud as you could just to really piss off the neighbors? I grumble. It's 6:45 in the morning. There won't be anyone downstairs for another 2 hours. At least that's what you told me last night. I thought some upbeat tunes might help you wake up in a good mood. Gotta say, you've rudely dashed my hopes, and you used to be such a morning person. That is a blatant lie. Back in Denny, the juvenile detention center where Xander and I met, I was a walking zombie until I'd managed to bribe one of the screws into giving me a double serving of coffee. And Xander just said it himself. He sat and watched me put away a bottle of tequila last night. He knew full well I was going to have a sore head this morning. I calculate the energy it'll require to twist around and thump him squarely in the jaw, but then decide the satisfaction of hearing him yelp isn't worth it. Help me up, I need a cold shower, then I'll be able to take the bike. It's too dangerous to ride, man. Fuck! It's like an ice rink out there. And anyway, I took your keys off you last night. You're gonna give them back. I'm not, actually. Friends don't let friends do stupid shit. This time, I don't bother to do the math. I spin on him and launch my fist into his side, grinding my teeth together as I make contact. Xander huffs out a winded breath, his silk robe slipping off his tattooed shoulders as he doubles over groaning. Do I need to ask again? I snap. No, no, he wheezes, his eyes rolling up into his head. That should do the trick.
3. Silver. It's amazing how many times a person can stave off death and still not feel like they deserve to live. Every morning, I wake up with the same question burning in my mind. Why? Why me? Why have I escaped death when there have been so many times I could easily have bitten it? Leon Wickman's spring fling party, the shooting at school, being kidnapped and hung from the rafters of the Raleigh High gymnasium roof. 18 people died at Raleigh the day Leon decided enough was enough. 18. Sarah Gilbert did charity work every weekend. Charisma Wells spent last summer in Ghana teaching English to children in poverty-stricken remote villages. Lawrence Harding was one of the smartest kids in school. He'd already scored himself a full ride at Duke. He was going to be a doctor. Chances were he was going to cure cancer or something, but his bright and promising future was snuffed out with the simple compression of a random fucking trigger. I'm nothing special. I'm averagely smart. On a good day, I'd say I'm not too hard on the eyes, but the world sure as hell isn't going to change for the better because I'm not hideous. I won't grow up to make the world a better place because I am in it. So, why? How have I survived so many disasters and dangerous situations when there are innocent 11-year-old kids bleeding to death in the back of cars with 5-star safety ratings? Careful, Silver. Don't fall. Don't slip down that rocky slope. Don't imagine his face. Don't imagine his pain. Don't imagine his fear. You won't survive that. The only thing frightening or shocking enough to pull me back from the brink of the dark precipice yawning open in my mind is the face of the boy who raped me. Sick that I have to resort to picturing him. But it works. The moment his smug, cruel smile flits through my mind, I shut it down. All of it. Every tender and aching thought that's been swirling around the inside of my head for what feels like an eon. I'm left standing in my room, hovering in front of the full-length mirror by my bathroom door, staring at a black dress in my hands. God knows how long I've been clutching it to my stomach. God knows how long I've been standing here in my underwear, hip bones jutting out a little too far, face a little thinner than it ought to be, drowning in thoughts of death and misery. I'm a sight to behold. Day by day, my body's been repairing itself from the litany of injuries Jake inflicted upon me. But I'm far from healed. The sickly, pale ghosts of my bruises still linger, a myriad of unsettling colors that stubbornly will not fade no matter how much arnica I slather on them. My ribs protest violently whenever I cough, sneeze, or breathe too deeply. I can't laugh without having to double over and grit my teeth while I ride out the pain. Not that I've had to do that over the past week, of course. There hasn't been much to laugh about. I shake out the dress in my hands, stepping into the fabric and pulling it up my body, eager to cover up all of the marks and blemishes that still mar my skin. If I can't see them, I can pretend they aren't there. If I can pretend they're not there, then I can pretend none of it ever
Sure you don't want me to come with you?
Jesus Christ! I slap my hand to my chest, bracing myself against my chest of drawers. Dad! Quit sneaking! You're gonna give me a heart attack! My father stands in the doorway, dressed in a formal black button-down shirt and heavily pressed suit pants. The thin black tie knotted around his throat looks like it's trying to strangle him. He's never exactly been tan, but his cheeks usually hold a little more color than they do right now. At his feet, Nipper sits, his black coat scruffy and wiry, his dark eyes sad. He whines softly as he gets up and limps across my room, giving my foot a little lick with his raspy pink tongue. Like me, he's recovering from his ordeal with Jake, but he will probably bear the scars of his injuries for the rest of his life.
I sang Sweet Home Alabama all the way up the stairs to let you know I was coming. You were in your own little world, Dad says.
Geez, poor guy. He could have been blowing into a tuba and banging a drum as he approached my room, and I probably wouldn't have heard him. The world's been slipping away a lot recently.
I don't think it's right, you two heading over there on your own. I think I should come with you, he says, propping himself up against the door jamb. He looks like he's dressed accordingly this morning, just in case.
I huff down my nose, trying to smile and failing miserably. Reflected in the mirror, my face looks comically contorted. If this is the best I can do at forging a simple smile, then it's a good job I never wanted to pursue a career in acting. Stay here, Dad. Get some work done. I feel bad that you haven't been able to make any progress on the book in, well, weeks now.
Book? What book? Fuck the book.
He laughs quietly.
This is big, Syl. You're so grown up, way too grown up. But this is bigger than you. It's definitely bigger than Alex. Maybe, I don't know, maybe having me there will help.
My eyes prick, burning the way they've been burning for the past week, every time I think about the knock on the door that echoed through Alex's apartment. I'm barely holding on to the strands of my sanity right now. I've unwittingly found myself participating in an unwinnable game of tug of war, and every second I have to fight to keep my hands wrapped around the rope, to keep pulling, to drag myself back over an imaginary line in the sand, where I might be able to think and breathe and exist without feeling like I have a knife plunged into the fragile meat of my heart. Sometimes minutes, even hours will pass in a day, and the pain will dim. I won't forget. I can't forget. But for brief snatches of time, my exhausted nerves become numb, anesthetized, and I trick myself into thinking I can handle this, that I might finally have my shit together. And then someone will say something about Alex or Ben or offer me help, and the rope will tear through my hands, drawing blood, dragging me off my feet and pulling me into the chaos again. And Alex, God, Ben wasn't even my brother. It goes without saying that Alex is a train wreck. I know it's stupid, he'd never do it, but I get scared at night when I'm alone and he's sent me away, that I'm going to wake up to a text message telling me that he's fucking killed himself. Dad doesn't mean any harm. He's only offering to come with us because he loves me more than life itself, and he cares about Alex too. But his kindness has inadvertently taken me out at the knees, I close my eyes, blowing out a steady breath, pleading with myself.
Don't. Don't do it. Don't you fucking dare, Silver Parisi. You are not going to fucking cry.
I've had to reapply my makeup twice already. If I start crying again now, I'm still going to be bloodshot and sniffling when I arrive to pick Alex up. And I can't. I can't fucking do that to him. He's been strong for me so many times before. I need to be strong for him now. Absently, I collect the black headband that's clipped over the top of my mirror, running my fingers over the cluster of small black silk flowers that adorn it. My heart throbs as I look up, finding my own eyes in the reflection. I don't look at Dad. If I do, I'm definitely going to lose my shit. Alex didn't even want me to go. I think, God damn it, this is so hard already. How the hell am I going to get through today? How am I ever going to be able to look my boyfriend in the eye again without bursting into tears? Not too long ago, he said something that stuck with me.
I can't bear for anything to happen to you. I can't see you hurt and not feel it. I can't see you suffer and not have something wither and die inside me. I can't see you wounded and not feel like I'm fucking failing you.
The emotion in his voice had startled me. I could see that he really meant what he was saying, that he was suffering because I was suffering. But I thought it was a gesture, some token of affection, an attempt on his part to try and shoulder some of the misery that was crushing me. I understand now, though. I wasn't entirely wrong. I want to take on the crippling burden that's grinding Alex into the dirt, but this feeling inside me is more than that. It's worse. I feel like I'm dying. I feel like I am failing him because nothing I can do or say will ever temper this pain. Whatever measure a soul is weighed in, I feel like mine is seeping away, piece by piece, ounce by ounce, whisper by whisper. Every second that Alessandro Moretti has to live with the knowledge that his little brother is dead, I feel like I will die from the hurt of it. From the moment I met him, Alex has been the light that has lifted the shadows. He's been the strength that's held me up. He's been a sheer force of nature, incomprehensible in his complexity, who has astonished and amazed me at every turn. When his mouth crooks into that lopsided, suggestive smirk, I fall in love with him all over again. And I can't bear the thought that perhaps he'll never be able to smile again. If Max died.
Christ, no. No, no, no. I can't entertain the thought, not even for a second. There's no room left inside me for any more hurt, theoretical or otherwise.
I'm already brimming over, too full and swollen with grief to house one drop more. Steeling myself, I place the band of black silk flowers onto my head, quickly arranging my hair around it. I look so fucking normal. Even with the bruises, I still look like me. How is that even possible when I feel like I've morphed into someone completely not myself? I appreciate it, Dad. I really do, I say stiffly. But Alex is... he's...
what is he, exactly? Traumatized? Mourning? I can't tell.
I've been searching for all of the usual signs of grief a normal person might exhibit when they lose someone close to them, but it's been hard to pinpoint signs of anything with Alex. He seems empty, null, hollowed out. When he looks at me, he doesn't see me. He stares through me, into some dark, forbidden void. He was sucked into that void a week ago, a place where I can't follow after him, and he hasn't been able to find his way back out of it ever since. I'm beginning to think, beginning to worry, that he might not want to surface from the inky black depths of it.
Okay, you know him best. If it has to be just the two of you, then it has to be just the two of you. But
I turn around and face my dad. But you're worried about me? You're scared this will be the final thing that sends me spiraling into a nervous breakdown? He huffs out a laugh on an exhale, looking down at his feet.
Nah, you're stronger than the rest of us combined. A wrecking ball couldn't put a dent in you, kid.
He's playing. I know this because I know him well, and I also know that he is worried about me.
All you need to do is call, Silver, he says. You know I'll come. You know I'll be there if either of you change your minds.
My chest pinches tightly, not with pain this time, but with love. To look at my father, you wouldn't peg him as the knight in shining armor type. His glasses are always just a fraction lopsided, the lenses perpetually smudged by fingerprints. His hair typically looks a little wild, his waves refusing to lay flat and be tamed. The beard he's been sporting of late isn't the well-manicured hipster kind that he believes it to be, nor is it the beard of a woodcutter or some sort of cabin-dwelling lumberjack. It's the kind of beard a writer grows when he's been crouched over a laptop keyboard, hammering away, living off caffeine and bagels for 6 months, trading in every spare second of the day in return for a handful of precious words. That violent, hard spark, inherent in many other men, doesn't exist within him. It isn't in his nature to lose his temper or throw his fists, which is why it's all the more impressive when he leaps to the defense of those he loves without a second thought to what it might cost him, or how much it might hurt. I know what he was planning with Alex the night Jacob Weaving came to the house and took me. We haven't spoken about it, but the truth has lain heavily between us all the same. He went with Alex to hurt the bastard who hurt me. He went to draw blood, and he went there carrying a gun. Cameron Parisi, the architect. Cameron Parisi, the novelist. Cameron Parisi, the father. Cameron Parisi, the would-be executioner. "Love you, Dad," I croak out, rummaging in my jewelry box. I'm already wearing a pair of simple gold studs and the fine gold chain that Graham gave me for my birthday last year. I don't need any more bling. I just need to be busy. I can't stand straight-backed and motionless and tell my father that I love him without falling to pieces.
"Love you too, kiddo."
His voice is soft and warm, and I feel like I'm floating, like I could fall into his words and be cushioned by them, protected and safe and 8 years old again.
"All right. Well, it's nearly time. The car will be here in 5. I've already made sure the driver knows you're stopping at Henry's on the way."
My father's feet make shushing sounds as he crosses the carpet in his socks. He kisses the back of my head lightly, laying a steadying hand on my shoulder, and I'm overwhelmed with gratitude. I'm so grateful for him. So grateful, lucky, and blessed that I have him here, ready for me to lean on if I need him. Having a father like mine is basically like winning the lottery. I'm so fucking lucky to have him in my life, which only serves to remind me that right now, the guy I love is alone, without either of his parents to lean on. The engine of the black Lincoln Town Car purrs like a cat as we glide across Raleigh. The world outside is crisp and white, shrouded with snow. The sky is a leached duck-egg blue, practically devoid of all color. In the front seat, the driver adjusts his trim chauffeur's hat and tries to make eye contact with me in the rearview mirror. I avoid doing so at all costs. However, my carefully crafted blank stare out the window doesn't deter him.
"Well then, what you got planned? A party? Some sort of girly sleepover?"
My eyes snap up and to the left, locking with his watery blue irises in the small expanse of mirror. "I'm sorry, what?" The driver, now that I'm looking at him, I see he's older than I originally thought, grins at me.
"Yeah, you know, New Year's Eve. Bullshit if you high school kids don't celebrate New Year's anymore. I know you do. I was cleaning puke out of this car for a week after last year. Gotta say, that getup's a little depressing for a party, though. Figured you kids were all still into neon and shit. Looks like you're going to a fucking funeral."
I almost laugh. Almost. I've clean forgotten that it's New Year's Eve. The car was Dad's idea. He didn't think I should have to drive today, and he knew Alex wouldn't be capable, so he forked out for a professional driver to transport us to the church and then on to the cemetery. Clearly, whatever agency Dad used hasn't passed on the particulars of today's journey to their driver. I'll break into pieces if I have to fill him in. I lean my head against the window beside me, and the glass is cold and wet, anchoring me into place. "Yeah, well, you know how it goes," I mutter. "Fashion's a fickle thing. One week it's electric pink, the next it's black lace and memento mori."
"What's that? Latin?" he grunts. "You Raleigh kids are fancy. Didn't teach us no Latin at Bellingham."
All of a sudden, he doesn't sound too impressed. I think I've offended him with my use of a foreign language, and a dead one at that. He thinks I'm being pompous.
What are memento mori, anyway? $300 sneakers, he grumbles.
I'm so drained, wrecked from night after night of insomnia, I dig deep for the energy necessary to explain that memento mori have nothing to do with sneakers. But I come up empty. For the remainder of the car ride, I close my eyes, head tilted back, resting on the seat behind me, and I pretend to be asleep. Weak, yes, but I've realized that sometimes you have to play dead in order to survive. When we reach Raleigh's Main Street, a deep cavern of sadness pulls at me. Swarming the snowy sidewalks, gathered in front of the decorated storefronts, the residents of Raleigh are rosy-cheeked and smiling, still drunk on the holidays and the fact that most of them didn't have to show up for work this morning. The town's small enough that I recognize a number of faces loitering on the corner in front of the hardware store. They recognize me as I climb out of the town car, too, and their festive smiles tactfully fade as I sidle past them, heading around the back of Henry's to the fire escape that leads to Alex's front door. When I was raped in that bathroom, I didn't want to broadcast what had happened to the world. I told one person, Principal Darhauer, who summarily dismissed my accusation as, in his words, a storm in a teacup, something and nothing. I kept my mouth shut after that. No one knew what Jake, Sam, and Killian did to me. They know now. It was impossible to keep the information quiet once I was hospitalized, Jake was arrested, and people started to talk. It came out. All of it, every gory, hideous, ugly detail, and now everyone within a 20-mile radius of Raleigh knows who I am. Silver Parisi, 17 years of age, raped, kidnapped, assaulted, attempted murder victim. Victim, 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 victim. I hate that word. No matter how hard I reject it, people keep trying to pin it to me like one of those red and white, "Hi, my name is... blank stickers. They want me to be broken. If I'm a mess, whimpering and crying in public, then they can get behind my story. They can make sense of it. I was bullied, kicked, punched, spat on, embarrassed, and humiliated too many times before Jake dragged my unconscious body out of my house, though. I'd already learned to set my jaw, lift my head high, and dole out a look of defiance that screamed, "Fuck you," very loudly whenever I felt judgmental eyes on me. That defiance doesn't sit well with people. It gives them the impression that whatever happened to me couldn't have been that bad, which is so untrue it's almost funny. This morning, I keep my head down, avoiding making eye contact with anyone in the first place. No sense in fueling gossip or feeding the rumor mill. The studded metal steps that lead up to Alex's place are slippery. I hold on to the handrail nice and tight as I ascend the stairs, and dread seeps into my veins. Alex has been a supercharged magnet over the past week. I'm pulled toward him so fiercely that it sometimes feels as though it physically hurts to be apart from him. At the same time, it also seems like Alex has been doing his level best to push me away. I've been both drawn to and repelled by him so badly since the news about Ben that I barely know if I'm coming or going anymore. I knock on the door. The doorbell hasn't worked since Alex moved in, and tuck my chin into the collar of my thick wool coat, waiting nervously for him to answer. It's 9:30 in the morning. The service doesn't start until 10, but we need to get across town and settled into the church, so we need to leave pretty much immediately. The door remains closed. "Come on, Alex," I mutter under my breath, knocking again, this time with a little more force. "If he's in the shower, we're going to be late." Just as I'm about to knock for a third time, the door flies open, sending a cloud of weed smoke and red light billowing out into the early morning. Xander Hawkins greets me with a flat, bored smile. He's wearing a Chicago Bulls basketball shirt underneath a red silk robe that looks like it belongs to a 45-year-old woman named Mara.
"Sup, Parisi?"
He brings a pipe to his lips and takes a deep pull. This is becoming a really bad habit. Why, whenever I show up at Alex's place, does Xander Hawkins end up answering the door? He's like a bad fucking smell that will not go away. "Where is he?" I shove past Xander, making my way down the hallway toward the bedroom, briefly scanning the living room through its open doorway as I pass. Alex might be a hard ass, and he might give off the impression that he will gladly punch a hole through someone's head so much as look at them. But he's not what most people expect him to be. He's meticulously clean. Tidy, to the point that even I get embarrassed by my own messiness whenever I'm around him. He needs his environment to be controlled. Everything has its place. Everything has an order, which is why I'm so confused when I see the state of the apartment. The place is a fucking shit show. What the fuck, Xander? How has this place gotten so trashed? I was here yesterday, for Christ's sake. It did not look like this then. Empty beer bottles, pizza boxes, actual pizza crusts discarded on the coffee table, a pool of something dark red and sticky looking, half dried on the hardwood floor outside the bathroom. The place reeks of cigarette smoke.
Don't blame me, sweetheart.
Xander smirks, holding up his hands as he follows me toward the end of the hallway.
Our boy got himself a little sideways last night. I only came by to watch the fireworks.
A stab of anxiety, cold and piercing, knifes into my chest. Alex did not do this by himself. My tone's confident, like I'm 100% sure that my boyfriend would never trash his own hard-won apartment like this. But in truth, I can believe it. I've been waiting for him to blow for days. There was no way he was going to be able to maintain his flat, sketchy, I feel nothing level of detachment forever. He was bound to snap. I was hoping I'd be there when it happened, so I could do some firefighting, try to minimize the damage both to Alex and to his surroundings. But it looks like I got here a little late. I should never have left him in the first place. I should have refused to leave. He was so adamant that he was fine, though. He swore he just wanted to sleep.
You're wasting your time, Xander calls after me.
I walk through Alex's bedroom door, and inside his room, the bed is unmade, a welter of tangled sheets hanging half off the mattress, showing the shiny silver fabric of the pillow top underneath. Piles of clothes have been dumped all over the room. The odd shoe, separated from its partner, abandoned on the polished wood like a forgotten landmine, waiting to be tripped over or trodden on. Alex's bedside table is crowded with crushed cigarette packets, pens, loose change, scraps of paper, receipts, and small plastic baggies. Empty, bar a faint white residue that tells a disturbing story all of its own. Alex is nowhere to be seen. Spinning around in the 3-inch heels I borrowed from Mom's designer shoe collection, I lock onto Xander with a laser beam focus. He immediately retreats, backing into the doorframe.
Whoa! Now, sweetheart, I really had nothing to do with this. Alex was on a tear when I got here. He didn't stop until his eyes rolled back in his head and he hit the deck somewhere around 3 this morning.
Where is he now? I'm not used to hissing at people. I don't think Xander's accustomed to people speaking to him this way either. He scowls, a disdainful dimple punctuating his cheek.
Who the fuck knows? Haven't got a clue. He woke up at 6:30, threw up in his guitar case, took a cold shower, and then he left. And before you accuse me of being a shitty friend, I did ask where the hell he thought he was going. He declined to part with the information.
You should have gone after him, I snarl, pushing past him out of the bedroom. He follows me, bare feet thumping against the floorboards.
Ha, yeah, right. I make questionable decisions all the time, but I'm not that stupid, darling. I don't have life insurance, and chasing after a Category 5 hurricane does not sound like a good time to me.
God, I could throat punch him. You should have called me then. Told me what he was doing. I would have come. My cell phone's already in my hand. I'm already pulling up Alex's contact info on the screen. A second later, I'm hitting the green call button.
Sorry, but again, I wouldn't bother.
Xander gestures to something on the floor. I stoop down and pick up. Oh, that's just fucking great. It's his cell phone. Smashed beyond recognition. The metal warped and flattened. What the hell happened? I look up at Xander, expecting a reasonable explanation for this. But then I see just how ridiculous he looks, and I realize I'm not going to get anything sensible out of him.
Urg, never mind.
Where the hell would he have gone? Did he run out of booze? Maybe he went out to grab some more. But no, Xander said he threw up in his guitar case. He couldn't have been feeling well. More alcohol was probably the last thing he wanted. So then what? I stand by the front door, pressing my fingers against my brow, trying to think.
It's his brother's fucking funeral this morning, Xander. I can't believe you'd let him do this. Not today.
The music stops, the song that was playing coming to an end, and for 1 second, a complete, consuming silence floods the empty spaces inside the apartment. It feels alive and angry.
What did you just say?
I give Xander a withering, sidelong look, surprised when I see his expression. He looks stunned. I've seen him arrogant. I've seen him amused. I've seen him annoyed. But I've never seen him like this. The swagger is gone, and suddenly, he doesn't look like a member of a potentially very dangerous motorcycle club. He looks like the 17-year-old high school student that he is.
What do you mean, it's his brother's funeral today?
Oh, this just gets better and better.
He didn't tell you? Of course he didn't tell you.
Makes perfect sense, really. Alex has been so shut down, getting him to speak to me has been a labor of love. Alex's friendship with Xander is clearly complicated, but I can see it for what it is. A love-hate relationship. It didn't even cross my mind that Alex would have kept this from him, though. Sliding my phone back into my pocket, I sigh, the weight on my shoulders far heavier than it was a moment ago. Telling this story isn't something I relish. Ben and the woman who was fostering him, they were in a car accident. Neither of them made it. I keep it as simple as possible. I can't talk about Jackie's perforated lungs, how she drowned in her own blood. I can't talk about Ben's brain bleed or how he slipped away from this world without anyone sitting on the back seat beside him holding his hand. Xander's face is ashen.
That isn't funny, sweetheart.
You think I'm joking? Christ, what kind of person would joke about something like that?
Tell me you're fucking with me, he persists. That's why he destroyed himself last night? That... Shaking his head, Xander slumps back against the wall.